From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Longtime Haitian President Jean-Bertrand Aristide is in exile in the Central African Republic tonight. He says U.S. troops took him there by force. The White House says he resigned voluntarily and calls Aristide's accusations complete nonsense. California Congresswoman Maxine Waters told CNN Aristide spoke with her this morning by phone from Africa.
The chief of staff of the American embassy in Port-au-Prince had come to his home with other diplomats and Marines. And they had told him he had to go, and he had to go now. That if he did not go, he would be killed and lots of other Haitians would be killed.
Secretary of State Colin Powell flatly denied the former president's claims at a U.S.-EU press conference earlier today.
Allegations that somehow we kidnapped former President Aristide, absolutely baseless, absurd. It's rather unfortunate that in this sensitive time when we're trying to stabilize the situation in Haiti and when we're sending in a multinational interim force to help bring about that stability and we're trying to put a political process on track, I think it's very unfortunate that these kinds of absurd charges are leveled at us.
Whether or not Aristide was forced out, he clearly left Haiti under intense pressure from the United States and from opponents and armed insurgents threatening to take over the capital. Tonight there are some 200 U.S. Marines in Haiti and more to come. The first contingent of 50 or more French troops arrived this morning. The U.N. Security Council last night voted unanimously to send a multinational peacekeeping force to Haiti for up to 3 months. Voices inside and outside Haiti are saying that force may need to stay much longer. Tonight on Point, Haiti after Aristide and the United States' role before, during, and after his departure. We begin in Port-au-Prince, where armed rebels today entered the headquarters of the National Police. They pledged to support the interim president, Boniface Alexandre, the country's Supreme Court Chief Justice. Tim Paget is Miami Bureau Chief for Time Magazine and joins me now from Port-au-Prince. Tim Paget, what is the mood in the Haitian capital tonight?
Well, on the streets, the mood is mostly one of relief because whatever you think of this rebel army, it and the police forces that apparently abandoned Aristide Saturday night have done a fairly good job of cleaning the streets in the past 24 hours of the dreaded Chimère. Those are the heavily armed street gangs that were loyal to Aristide and had been terrorizing this city for the last week in anticipation of the rebel army's advance on Haiti. So, as I said, there's a palpable sense of relief among people because at least that terror is off the streets, and now they're waiting. In the meantime, they're cheering Guy Philippe, the leader of the rebel army, and just waiting to see what kind of government emerges from this chaos.
And for now, you're saying then the chaos in the streets, the thuggery, the burning, and all the rest has diminished since Aristide left?
Oh, it has greatly diminished. 2 days ago, I would say Friday and even yesterday on Sunday, you couldn't move through the streets of Port-au-Prince without just having this sick feeling in your gut that at the next block or the next corner, you would be confronted by a pickup truck full of AK-47 toting Chimère, young thugs who wearing ski masks. Who would accost you at gunpoint? Fortunately, they didn't kill any foreign journalists like myself or my colleagues, but unfortunately, they did kill quite a few Haitian citizens.
Tim Paget, who's in charge in Haiti tonight?
No one. I mean, I have to be honest with you. No one's really in charge in Haiti. This is the only thing that's really ruling Haiti right now is anarchy. You can perhaps say that the streets are being patrolled and secured in some ways by this combination of insurgents and police. Constitutionally, you can say that Boniface Alexandre is the new constitutionally selected interim president of Haiti. But the reality is no one is really in charge here, and that is the scary thing. and it is going to take some incredibly skillful diplomatic work, both by Haitian politicians and the U.S. and international diplomatic community, to start forging some sort of democratic transition here that keeps the violent chaos from erupting again.
And, Tim, are the foreign troops, U.S., French, and perhaps others by this point, I don't know, are they in evidence at all in the streets?
Well, and not really, no. The international, you know, in many ways, I think, you know, it seems that the international peacekeeping force, although some have begun to come in, is really still on the drawing board in terms of what this international peacekeeping force is supposed to do. The U.S. Marines are here mainly to protect, as they call it, key facilities, the airport, the presidential palace, but they have no mandate to really protect the streets. As I said before, that's being done now by this partnership of the rebels and police.
Is the new interim president, Alexandre Boniface, able to communicate to Haitians? Has he made radio or television addresses? What's the line of communication?
No, as far as we know, he hasn't even been sworn in yet. Believe me, Boniface Alexandre is not easily recognizable by anyone in Haiti. He's the Supreme Court chief, but he has no real recognition amongst Haitians. The one figure who does have incredible street recognition now amongst Haitians is Guy Philippe, the sort of charismatic, very media savvy leader of this insurgency that entered in full force into Port-au-Prince today. He right now is the main character in the driver's seat right now. The political opposition had no idea that it was going to have to deal with this man, and he right now is essentially running the show. I'm not saying that he's ruling the country, but he's running the show in terms of how this democratic transition is going to move forward, because it doesn't move forward without making deals with him and his army.
But Guy Philippe and the other leaders of the gunmen, who now, as far as we understand, control most Haitian towns and cities, have their own very checkered pasts.
Yes. I mean, Guy Philippe himself has been under investigation by both Haitian and U.S. officials for alleged ties to drug trafficking, as have some of the other leaders of his army. But even more troubling, many of the leaders of his army and many of just the foot soldiers are people who have a very shadowy past in terms of being involved with military death squads back during the old Duvalier dictatorship, and especially during the military dictatorship that aborted Aristide's first presidency back in the early 1990s. Louis Jodel Chamblain, for example, one of the insurgency leaders, was the head of a paramilitary death squad called FRAP and he himself was convicted in absentia back in 1995 for having participated in massacres of civilians.
And, Tim, I have to ask you, what is the response in Haiti tonight to these reports of Jean-Bertrand Aristide calling friends and supporters in the United States and elsewhere and saying he was abducted by U.S. forces in a coup d'etat?
It's really not resonating. It's really not resonating, I think, with the Haitian public in the way I think Aristide had hoped it would. You have to understand, Aristide had very little credibility with the Haitian public when he did leave. And one of the main reasons for that was that he seemed to have called out the Chimère, these armed thugs, to try to show, you know, that he and they still had authority in Port-au-Prince. It was an appalling gesture on his part. Friday in particular was one of the most horrific days that the people in Port-au-Prince have seen. So by the time he left, his credibility with the Haitian public had plummeted even further. And I think that is making it harder for him to sort of reach out and make this case with the Haitian public that he was the victim of a coup d'etat, whether or not it's true.
Tim Padgett, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Tim Padgett is Miami bureau chief for Time magazine. He spoke with me from Port-au-Prince, Haiti. We are talking tonight about Haiti after Aristide and the role of the United States before, during, and after his departure. What went wrong with Aristide and Haiti? Do you believe American soldiers saved Aristide or abducted him? And what responsibility does Aristide have for Haiti's dire straits? What responsibility does Washington have? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from New York is Gary Pierre-Pierre, publisher and editor-in-chief of The Haitian Times, a 30,000 circulation weekly English-language newspaper published in New York. Good evening and welcome, Gary Pierre-Pierre.
Thank you. Good evening.
Thanks for being with us. Also joining me tonight from Hartford, Connecticut, is Alex Dupuy, professor of sociology at Wesleyan University. He is author of Haiti and In the New World Order, The Limits of the Democratic Revolution. Good evening and welcome, Alex Dupuy.
Good evening, and thank you for having me on your show.
Thanks for joining us. Alex Dupuy, to you first. Let's go straight to these contradictory statements, apparently from Jean-Bertrand Aristide and from Washington. The White House and Colin Powell say it's nonsense and absurd his claims to Maxine Waters, Randall Robinson, and others that he was abducted and taken forcibly out of the country. What's your response?
Well, whether he was abducted or not, I'm not so sure. What seems to be coming out in some reports, including a recent report in the Miami Herald by Frank Davies, was that basically Aristide was made an offer he couldn't refuse, by which is meant that he was told on no uncertain terms that unless he resigned, unless he left Haiti, that the U.S. would do nothing to protect him. They would not stop the rebels from coming into Port-au-Prince and assaulting the National Palace, and that as a result of that, they couldn't guarantee his safety. So as Davies quotes one of the officials involved in the last-minute negotiations, Aristide was given the choice of either leaving in a Learjet or in a body bag.
So how do you interpret that, Alex Dupuy? Is that
I interpret that as you have very little choice here. That is, you don't have much of a choice. If you want to stay and be killed by the rebels that are coming after you, then that's your choice. If you want to leave, then we'll make it possible for you to leave.
But it's a long way from setting up sentries around the president's palace and protecting the man.
Well, again, there are some in the Davies report. He mentions the fact that his security guards, personal security force, which is in fact a U.S. supplied security force from a firm in the United States, asked the embassy in Port-au-Prince if they would protect Aristide if the armed rebels reached the palace, and they said not to count on it. So whether or not Aristide was handcuffed or kidnapped, as he puts it, that one need not have done that to give him the message that his time was up and he had to leave.
Gary Pierre-Pierre, there's a lot to talk about tonight, but what do you make of these, the word coming from Aristide in Africa that he was forced out and flown out by U.S. forces against his will?
Well, I think Professor Dupuy had a very good assessment of the situation. When, and I read the same article he's referring to, and I think it was a very, very fascinating piece in the Herald today. I mean, it was a question of when. I mean, I think Tim Padgett was very eye-opening in his statements that whole story did not resonate in Haiti. I mean, because of what happened on Friday. Friday, I would call it one of the darkest days in Haiti's recent history. I mean, I know people personally who were just in fear for their lives.
So why would Aristide make these claims to such prominent Americans?
Well, first of all, he made it to the first person to broke this story was Randall Robinson. Remember, his wife, who is a main lobbyist for Aristide. These are people who have worked for him in the past. He trusts them. And I think it's not by coincidence that he has chosen these people to put that story out. I mean,
is he trying to make a case for his return?
Excuse me?
Is he trying to make a case for his return or to cover, to save his reputation? Or how do you
think it's a question of being a martyr? I mean, I think there's a sort of level of martyr syndrome here from the part of Aristide. It was clear to everyone, whether you supported Aristide or not, that, you know, his departure was imminent. I mean, it was really, I mean, the other bizarre things that happened, and there were some serious ones. Many ones, rather. Friday night.
Gary Pierre-Pierre, save that story. We've got to take a short break. We'll come right back and get it. We're talking tonight about Haiti after Aristide and the role of the United States before, during, and after his departure. You can join our conversation. What went wrong with Aristide and Haiti? Do you believe American troops saved Aristide or abducted him? And where does responsibility lie here? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about Haiti after Jean-Bertrand Aristide and the role of the United States before, during, and after Aristide's departure. You can join our conversation tonight. What responsibility, if any, does the United States have for Haiti's dire straits? And if the U.S. is committed to democracy building in Iraq, should it be committed to democracy building in Haiti? In the past month, in the past decade, has Washington honestly stood up for democracy in development in Haiti or not? And what about the Haitians? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined tonight by Alex Dupuy, professor of sociology at Wesleyan University and author of Haiti in the World Economy and Haiti in the New World Order. And from New York by Gary Pierre-Pierre, publisher and editor-in-chief of the Haitian Times. Gary Pierre-Pierre, you were citing a couple of incidents just in the last day or two.
Well, yes. I mean, President Aristide held a news conference at 1 o'clock in the morning, and he went into 1:30, 2 o'clock.
And which day was this, Gary?
Excuse me?
Which day was this?
It was Friday night.
Okay.
We just were wondering, you know, what was the point of this news conference? It was sort of like of a man who was totally isolated, and he needed a platform, just someone to talk to, something to talk to. And during that day, he called CNN. The day before, he called CNN and gave him interviews. He was just waiting to talk. He just couldn't stop talking. And that, to me, when a colleague of mine told me that he's not going to last over the weekend, I thought perhaps it was going to last a week or so. But then, you know.
A man in distress, a man under pressure, and he
exactly
was showing it, you're saying.
Exactly. It was clear. So right now, to float the kidnap idea, you know, obviously he didn't go on his free will. But just give the impression that, you know, the Marines stormed the palace and just handcuffed him and whisked him away. It's a bit far-fetched.
Alex Dupuy, where do you put Washington in all of this? Over the last month and more, things have been deteriorating very rapidly. Washington has not exactly been warm to Aristide for a long time. Has the United States stood up for its principles and for its commitments in Haiti and all that's happened there?
Not recently. You correctly put it that Washington, especially the Republicans in Washington, have never liked Mr. Aristide. That was very clear when he first came to power in 1991, after the elections of 1990, when he was overthrown by the military. First, the Bush administration blamed him for that overthrow, for that coup d'etat, and did everything it could to force Aristide into a compromise with the Haitian military. That didn't work. And when President Clinton came to power, the mounting pressure of the boat people reaching the shores of Florida compelled him to return Aristide and remove the junta that had overthrown him. Mm. When Clinton left office by 2000, relations between Aristide and Washington had soured again. And when the parliamentary elections of May 2000 occurred and the OAS discovered the fraudulent elections for seven of the seats, the fraudulent counting of the mm-hmm. ballots for seven of the seats that went to Aristide's party in the first round, mm-hmm. that gave the opposition parties the opportunity to basically declare the entire elections to have been fraudulent. They boycotted the second round of the elections, as did the OAS. They also boycotted the presidential elections of 2000.
And a lot of foreign aid was cut off.
Cut off immediately. In fact, the foreign aid was cut off even before Aristide came to power by the World Bank. That had been cut off since.
We've seen half $1 billion or something like that, is the number.
Exactly. Approximately $500 million that was cut off from him, and so which made it very difficult for him to deliver any of the programs that he might have had intended to deliver. But also corruption became rather rampant under his administration, which added to the problem. And the recalcitrance of the opposition to negotiate in good faith with Mr. Aristide, and Aristide's own turning to his gangs of Chimere, as was reported by the reporter from Port-au-Prince.
This is when he didn't really have a military because he'd had to push them away. His police force
correct.
Was not well-trained or well-paid, and he turned to thugs, apparently.
Well, he could not count on the police to protect him. There were, in fact, two attempts by the armed rebels who now are taking charge of Port-au-Prince. First in July of 2001, mm-hmm. and then again in December of 2001 against the National Palace to test the waters, so to speak. So Aristide wrongly, and I think this was the beginning of his undoing, turned to violence and to his chimeras to intimidate the opposition and allowed the police to also participate in this process of human rights violations, all of which certainly undermined his credibility and his legitimacy, and provided the opposition with the excuse they needed to not negotiate with him and basically bring the situation to the crisis that erupted in early February.
So now there's talk of an international peacekeeping force, and who knows what the next chapter will be. But before we go there, Alex Dupuy, what's the fundamental lesson that you take away from this last 10 years, and maybe more than that, of U.S.-Haitian interaction? What should the U.S. take from this? What does Haiti need to take from what's happened here?
Well, Haiti, I think the lesson that Haiti needs to take from this is not to rely on a single savior. The cult of the leader, so to speak, has to be fundamentally given up by Haitians as looking to someone who's going to save them. Rather, I think the lesson for Haitians and for Haiti is to build viable democratic institutions, viable democratic procedures and methods of accountability, and no longer rely on the sort of single leader who's going to lead them out of their misery.
And for the U.S.?
For the U.S. is to basically respect the democratic process and the outcome of democratic elections, even if the person who is elected is not someone that you like.
Has the U.S. done that in the event?
Respected the democratic outcomes?
Yes.
Certainly not, because I think here we have the U.S. supporting the opposition from the very beginning, especially the International Republican Institute that financed the opposition along with the European Union, and made it clear that even though everyone knew that the opposition parties at best represented a minority of the population, the fact that the U.S. supported them unconditionally and always blamed Aristide for the breakdown of negotiations between 2001 and 2004 meant that the opposition was basically given a veto power over the political process. And their strategy was from the very beginning, and they made this very public, from the very beginning of 2001, their strategy was what they called the zero-option strategy, which was to drive Aristide out of power. And while they didn't necessarily count or work, collaborated with the armed uprising, they certainly welcomed that when they came. And now the question is how are they going to deal with these armed rebels, the former members of the Haitian military, who have basically taken power and are on the verge of bringing Haiti back to the Duvalier era.
And these are not the opposition elites. These are tough guys with very tough backgrounds. Alex Dupuy, Gary Pierre, please stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation James Morrell. He joins us from Washington. He's executive director of the Haiti Democracy Project. Good evening and welcome, James Morrell.
Hi, glad to be there.
Good to have you. So Jean-Bertrand Aristide is gone. I believe that's what your group wanted. Are you celebrating tonight?
Well, we're certainly celebrating, but not over an individual. We almost consider it to be Haiti's re-liberation in 2004.
Gary Pierre has written that traditionally the opposition to autocrats or leaders in Haiti came from what he calls the pigmentocracy, the light-skinned elite. Is that who has risen up against Jean-Bertrand Aristide,
well,
who was dark-skinned and very open about it and considered that part of his identification?
One of the wonderful things about the movement that did arise against Aristide was that it crossed these usual race lines and these usual class lines. It was a broad consensus of the society. It was public opinion. And you could see that in the makeup of the street demonstrations, which were the largest in Haiti's history, that supported the Democratic platform. I observed one of those demonstrations, and it was very clear that you had something new. You had a precious moment of unity among the Haitian people that actually recalls 1804, when the people came together to get rid of their foreign oppressors.
That was the French and Napoleon's crew.
Right.
James Morrell, on the other hand, the instrument of force that brought this to a head is a very tough crew, former Haitian military men, death squad men, drug runners, allegedly some of them, and not, you know, people to play patty cake with. How is the sort of, I don't know, bourgeois opposition in Port-au-Prince going to deal with these tough guys who have come in from the north?
Well, as I mentioned, they're not the bourgeois opposition. The class lines are crossed. The race lines are crossed.
Oh, let me grant you that. But the nonviolent opposition. Then
right,
let me put it that way.
The nonviolent ones, and because they were so nonviolent, we never knew that if you went in with a couple of hundred men with a few guns, you could knock down this whole house of cards that Aristide had there.
Mm.
Let's not overestimate the military potential of these folks. The real factor was that there was no one left to support Aristide, and that the people came out in the streets and greeted these guys too as they came in the north. So the real fact here, and it's something that we can build on, is there's a broad consensus, and we do have some democratic actors on the scene, and our support should be with them.
Gary Pierre-Pierre, what's your level of optimism tonight looking forward from this moment of disarray and the leader gone and the promise of some foreign forces coming for some period of time? Are you optimistic? Where does hope lie for you?
Well, I'm always optimistic. As long as you're alive, you have to remain optimistic that things are going to change.
Though Haiti's track record is not too good.
Well, you're absolutely correct. But the key is, and as Mr. Morrell point out, this precious moment of unity among the opposition is whether or not that precious moment can last a long time, because these are motley crew that united under one base, their dislike of Aristide or their desire to see him out. Because you had all, he's absolutely correct, the opposition was multifaceted. But at the same time, these are people with deep differences among themselves to begin with. And this coalition, it remains to be seen whether it can hold together and really work for Haiti. I hope so. I mean, because I know them very well. Some of them are friends of mine. And I was in Port-au-Prince last month. And I urge them, if you are serious about this, that you need to, you know, broaden this base truly. Speak to the people, because they do not trust your motives at this point.
But you're writing in the Wall Street Journal this morning that the United Nations, the U.S. and France and others need to establish a considerable policing presence in the country, as I read you, for 2 or 3 years to give Haiti a chance to build, to do what?
To do what Professor Dupuis said earlier, to allow the development of these democratic principles to take hold, because they're not going to happen overnight, and you need time, and they don't exist at this point, and that's why you had Aristide. You know, he trampled all these institutions, because one of the things that he did as well was politicize the police force. And that's why at the end, the police department did not support him, because there was no meritocracy at all.
But do you think there's a realistic chance that the UN is going to step up with that kind of investment in Haiti over the next 2 or 3 years?
Whether they want to or not. You could do it wholesale, or you could do retail. You come back every 10 years, or you can, you know, stay the course. And I would add also, they can't do it alone. They have a lot of people in this country who are committed to helping them. They need to turn to them. They have political scientists. You have one of them on your show is quite articulate, understand Haiti very well. You have people from the private sector. You have all kinds of skills from Haitian Americans here, and they need to consider that. Obviously, they can't go it alone, and that's been part of the problem, going alone and imposing certain things without the sons or daughters of the country to be on board.
Well, alone, but yet there's been a lot of intervention of one kind or another, not least U.S. over the years. Gary Pierre-Pierre, Alex Dupuis, James Morrell, stand by. I want to invite our callers into the conversation. Ernie is calling from Watertown, Massachusetts. Hi, Ernie. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call, and I'm so happy to be on. Now, basically, I've been listening to your conversation regarding Aristide leaving. I mean, I think the way I look at it, if we try to examine this in a democratic way, I don't think the way he left is what should have happened. Basically, whether Mr. Aristide is like, President Aristide is like or not in Haiti, he was elected. I don't know about the second election, whether he was truthful or not. We could debate that. but he was elected. I feel that we could have stepped in a couple of weeks ago. And basically, I think Mr. Aristide should have given the option to do an election, and he should not be part of it. That should have been an option. But
he should have been given the option to stay in power until a new election could be held, you're saying, Ernie?
Well, I feel like you should have been, mm-hmm. they should have stepped in to stop them from leaving the country. That's number one. Because we look at it, it's been happening and happening over and over in Haiti. Mm-hmm. Now, having said that, I don't also deny the fact that Mr. Aristide's support was really not there anymore. Basically, what we have going on in Haiti is that the people that Aristide, the Chimere, he gave the gun, turn on him. The bourgeoisie who has money in Haiti realize that this guy really is a dictator. I mean, when you look at what Aristide has been doing since he came back the second time after Préval, I mean, this is not a democratic leader. But at the same time also, we have to be able to look at the foreign policy, the World Bank that tied his hand, that made it very impossible for this man to do anything in Haiti.
He was in a tough situation. Ernie, we've got it, and we thank you for your call. Alex Dupuis, what's your reading there? The way things have turned out, is it an affirmation of democracy in Haiti, a defense of democracy? Is it an offense against democracy?
I think it's the latter, because, in fact, while Mr. Aristide is responsible for many of the mistakes and errors and misrule that he's been accused of, and therefore has to be held to account for his behavior in office and violation of the Constitution and the rule of law and so on, he was also certainly helped to turn in that direction by an opposition that from the very beginning wanted nothing but his ouster, by several attempts to destabilize his government by armed uprisings, or at least attempted assaults on, as I mentioned before, the Haitian National Police Military Academy, and then on the National Palace in 2001. And the OAS made it clear that while the opposition itself did not initiate these armed attempts, there were nonetheless trial runs for what was to come later. So there is no question that Aristide was very much not part of the problem, but not the entire part of the problem.
Alex Dupuis,
I think if Washington had in fact respected the electoral outcome and forced the opposition to negotiate to participate in elections, which they feared because they knew that they probably would lose, then the situation might have been developed in a very different way than it did.
James Morrell, we just have a few seconds before the break, but how about it? Maybe it takes two to tango, and the opposition was not willing to accept that this was the democratically elected leader.
The elections in the year 2000 were fraudulent, and the opposition was right to boycott that process and hold out for the democratic outcome that we've now that we're having. I would say that this latest event is a great affirmation of democracy in Haiti. Of course, we have to build on it.
Well, there we are. And that's the situation in Haiti tonight. We've got much more to jump into here. We're looking at Haiti after Jean-Bertrand Aristide, who is in the Central African Republic tonight. We're looking at the role of the United States before, during, and after his departure with James Morrell, Gary Pierre-Pierre, and Alex Dupuis. You can join the conversation. Do Haiti's politics and development matter to you, to the United States? Or is the main interest here simply in keeping refugees away? What have we learned from Aristide and Haiti? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about Haiti after Aristide. I'm joined tonight from Washington by James Morrell, Executive Director of the Haiti Democracy Project, from New York City by Gary Pierre-Pierre, Publisher and Editor-in-Chief of the Haitian Times, and from Hartford, Connecticut by Alex Dupuis, Professor of Sociology at Wesleyan University and author of Haiti in the New World Order. You can join the conversation as well. What went wrong with Aristide and Haiti? What responsibility does the United States share tonight for Haiti's dire straits? Kame is calling from Malden, Massachusetts. Hi, Kame. You're on the air.
Hi. How you doing?
Great, thanks. Great.
I think that it's really, really complicated. No winner, no loser.
Aristide looks like a loser tonight.
I'm sorry?
Mr. Aristide looks like a loser tonight.
Well, there's a lot of doubt about Aristide's departure. I mean, I don't wanna go over it, but I just wanna make my point.
Yeah.
I think that last time a few minutes ago, you brought a good point about the Haitian bourgeoisie. I mean, called light skin.
Mm.
I mean, we know it from the beginning. They didn't like Aristide. Make no mistake about it. And second, if we get rid of Aristide, we should get rid of the Haitian opposition because they're not credible. Because we cannot move from bad to bad, you know?
Well, why are they not credible? In a democracy, you've got opposition. Why is that not credible, Kane?
It's not credible because when you check the background of those people in the opposition, you know, all of them, they won. All of them. None of them have a good background. I mean, make no mistake about it. And when we take the situation that, I mean, you say, well, the Haitian opposition, they're not flexible. They said, well, option zero, that the government should go.
Must go.
We don't really
right.
like that. And in every country, all the opposition should be flexible. I mean, because the battle is not a battle for country. What? After 3 months, they're going to fight each other. We know that. Because it's not a battle for country. It's a battle for, power.
Kane, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. Gary Pierre, can you respond?
Well, I think the call is onto something because there's no good guy here. I mean, there's no good guys. You can't paint anybody as being the savior here, and hence the dilemma. If you remember, for a long time now, the U.S. has been, it's clear that the U.S. is not supportive of Aristide, but when you spoke to anyone in Washington, and they said, well, what's the alternative? They winced a bit because they couldn't really feel comfortable. I mean, beyond the if I call it militia element of the opposition, that just emerged recently.
The tough guys, the thugs, the armed ones.
I really don't like to use that word. I think it's sort of like gratuitous.
Well,
I mean,
perhaps it is, but I've seen them described this way again and again. Perhaps it's wrong.
Well, I mean, it's simplistic, and certainly I would call them malicious. But, you know, we don't want to...
Okay, fair enough. All right.
But
yep.
the fact of the matter is the civil opposition lacks lots of credibility. Because, for one thing, these are the same people who created Aristide. They created this monster, and they forced it down our throat, and now they're telling us that he wasn't bad. Part of them. And they made an alliance with the Chamber of Commerce types, and they're united. And at that point, for me, it became very difficult to believe them, because 10 years ago, if you would say anything critical of Aristide, these same elements were really ready to kill you, literally.
And are you talking about the armed element or the civil opposition?
The civil element. If you look at the Democratic Convergence, Evans Paul, Gérard Pierre-Charles, Evans Paul ran Aristide's campaign in 90.
Mm-hmm.
They orchestrated Aristide. They brought Aristide to the country because out of fear for Roger Lafontaine, who was hence the chief of the Tonton Macoute.
So what's your explanation? What happened here? What went so wrong?
Aristide tried to outsmart all of them because then they felt betrayed and they turned against him. He put them outside of the power structure and they had no influence. Aristide relied on chimeras, essentially, before he gave them guns, that's who he relied to. There were a lot of demagogues inside his administration, his kitchen cabinet. They were not people of substance. And the opposition felt betrayed, and they turned against him.
Mm.
But they were part of his making. They created the myth of Aristide.
Mm. Gary, let me get another call here. Antoine is calling from Boston. Hi, Antoine. You're on the air.
How you doing? I'm listening to the barrage of half-truths and really unfavorable depictions of Haitians. Let's tell the truth for just one second, if you would bear with me.
Please do.
Number one, why did George Bush send troops to Haiti if he was there not to protect a democratically elected official? Number two, just because George Bush did not like Aristide, the same democratic principles that the Founding Fathers brought this country to bear power is the same democratic process that George Bush was selected and not elected. Part three, where are all these guns coming from? The United States has made a very clear case to the world that they did not support Aristide, and who knows what the CIA did on ground to back the individuals who took Aristide out of power. Also, for George Bush to sit there and state that Aristide should leave, why do you have the Democratic leader of the powerfulest nation in a free country asked another Democratic leader, whether you like the man or not or agree with the process, why would George Bush ask an elected official to leave the country and not support this man and support the opposition who is strictly rebels from the street?
Antoine, they're good and provocative questions. Alex Dupuy, they seem to speak to your perspective on this. You hear the deep skepticism here about Washington's motives.
Yes, I would be careful to ascribe the label Democratic to the opposition. In fact, as Gary Pierre mentioned, many of them were former allies of Aristide, and even some of those who cried, who say that the elections of May 2001 were fraudulent themselves, like the part of the opposition had won elections in 1995 under fraudulent elections. They were also opposed by many of the groups and parties who joined later with them to oppose Aristide, and they were all certainly vehemently opposed to participating in any new parliamentary elections under Aristide because they knew that they probably would lose.
But with these measures taken by Washington, do you think that the United States is going to be seen as having supported democracy in the Caribbean?
No,
with this
I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't think that one can draw that conclusion. The caller also raised the important question about the armed rebels. And here you have some of those members like Philippe, like Chamblain and some of the others who had
the leaders of the armed group that's come in.
The armed group, correctly, who had been implicated in criminal activities. Chamblain and some others had been, as the reporter from Port-au-Prince mentioned, tried in absentia for crimes committed against Haitians in 93 and 94. And here is these fellows who took refuge in the Dominican Republic, trained in the Dominican Republic before they crossed over into Haiti, crossed over into Haiti with weapons and launched an uprising against Aristide. And the U.S. Certainly knew this well for quite some time because, in fact, according to one press report, President Aristide had been warned that this was going on.
Could they have intervened earlier and brought a different outcome?
That's exactly my point. My point is that from the sentiment of the U.S., that probably was a welcome opportunity to weaken Aristide's grip on power. And, in fact, if one looks at the events of the past weekend, when the CARICOM members intervened with the peace plan whereby they proposed to form a government of national unity with the opposition, with a new prime minister, Aristide immediately accepted that plan, but the opposition did not. And Washington gave the opposition ample time to reject that that peace plan when they knew ahead of time that they were going to reject the plan. But in the meantime, allowed the rebels to gain more and more territory and advance towards Port-au-Prince, thereby presenting Aristide with a fait accompli. That either you step out or you know the rebels will enter Port-au-Prince. We're not going to stop them from entering, and you'll be killed.
There was clearly
so
a decision,
me,
you know, not to be
so
in there earlier.
It seems to me that the U.S. was very much part of the process of ultimately
James Morrell?
Yes.
Yes, we just got another minute left. What's your response, and where does this go now? How much international aid does Haiti need for how long?
Well, what I was trying to explain was that there is a broad consensus in Haiti. It was for the ouster of Aristide, and it's for a democratic change. And it was that consensus that made it possible for this tiny group of armed people to make such progress across northern Haiti. And now it was wrong to say that the Bush administration was working to undermine Aristide. They were perfectly content to leave him in there, and they did so for 3 years. They rendered him diplomatic support. And just a week ago, Secretary Powell was insisting that the guy was democratically elected when he well knew that he was not. So what happened was basically an insurrection of the Haitian people themselves. It had been crystallized by some of the marches and the activities of the Democratic Coalition in the cities, and then it was seen spontaneously when the armed groups came in from the Dominican Republic. So I consider it a very positive development.
And a democratic development from your point of view, and there's the debate tonight. We're going to have to come back and look more at what lies ahead for Haiti, but I thank each of you for joining us tonight. James Morrell, Executive Director of the Haiti Democracy Project, thank you for being with us.
Yes.
And Gary Pierre-Pierre, publisher and editor-in-chief of the Haitian Times, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
And Alex Dupuy, professor of sociology at Wesleyan University, author of Haiti in the New World Order, thank you very much for being with us tonight.
You're welcome, and thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. We are going to close this hour talking with one American who has devoted much of his professional life to bringing medical care to the people of Haiti. Paul Farmer began working in Haiti as a student in 1983. The next year, he started medical school at Harvard, and 2 years later helped found Partners in Health, which grew from a one-building clinic in a small Haitian village to a sprawling health complex that now treats more than 200,000 patients a year. Farmer has been Partners in Health medical director since 1991. He's also a professor at Harvard Medical School. He's received global accolades for his ambitious medical work in Haiti and elsewhere, but he still spends a lot of time in the impoverished Haitian backroads. In October, he joined us with Tracy Kidder, author of Mountains Beyond Mountains, The Quest of Dr. Paul Farmer, a man who would change the world. He joins me now to talk about Haiti's current crisis. Good evening and welcome, Paul Farmer.
Thank you for having me back.
Thanks for joining us. Paul Farmer, we've just got a few minutes here, but we'd like to get your take on what has happened in the last month, in the last 2 days in Haiti. Is this a welcome development or not?
Well, I think one would be hard-pressed to call the violent overthrow of a government, a democratically elected government, and a welcome development. I couldn't disagree more with the your panelist who's just said as much. I don't think it's a welcome development at all. It's it's a terrible development for the Haitian people.
Because it's an offense to democracy in your eyes?
Well, sure it is. I mean, Haiti has been is the oldest country in this hemisphere, with the exception of our own, and has been struggling to emerge from dictatorships and military governments, and the first democratic elections, everyone agrees, were held in 1990, and that is those are the elections in which Aristide won his first landslide, only to be deposed 7 months after he was inaugurated. And this struggle goes on and on. And someone just said that on your program that Bush gave ample diplomatic support to Aristide. That's absurd. That's an absurd claim. The administration in Washington has blocked all international and development assistance to Haiti for 3 years. It's a matter of public record. Anyone who wants to study this can.
It's very clear.
And it can study it. I mean, anybody who wants to look at what our government has done for Haiti and through the government can just, check our official records.
Paul Farmer, Jean-Bertrand Aristide has been portrayed this evening by at least one of my guests as universally disliked, even despised in Haiti. You spend a lot of time there. How do you see the way ordinary Haitians that you interact with had understood their president?
Haiti is a very polarized society, and people have argued that it has the highest indices of social inequality in the hemisphere. And so it's important for me to say that I don't have a lot of truck and interactions with Haitian intellectuals or people who make commentaries or write in English or French. But the people who I serve as a physician and who I see on a daily basis are the ones who keep voting for Aristide. And so the idea that there is broad consensus about this is absurd. Anyone with any kind of sociological interest in the Haitian people would know that's not the case.
So who has won with Aristide's departure?
Well, the forces that do not want an elected government in place, well, they won this morning. And I think it's really important to find out who, beyond those crying very loudly for the ouster of the government, who is not crying loudly, is also behind this. And, I've read, as many of you have, that Aristide says he did not resign and was pushed out. And, there are variations on this theme in the newspapers. And so I would like to know, especially as an American citizen and working in Haiti, who was involved in the pushing. The winners, I suppose, would be the former military and paramilitary who had the armed part of the insurrection, and also the traditional political elite who supported them. And
Paul Farmer, that's all we have time for tonight. We'll have to have you back. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Paul Farmer, medical director of Partners in Health in Haiti. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.